Blog Talk
Peace
Radio.
And love. Welcome out there in radio land. Happiness, 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 nothing but happiness on this Sabbath day. Today we're going to be talking about Nicodemus and the trial of Jesus. So who was Nicodemus in the Bible? All that we know of Nicodemus in the Bible is from the Gospel of John. In John 3:1, he described us the Pharisees. The Pharisees were a group of Jews who were factitiously in keeping the letter of the law and often opposed Jesus throughout his whole ministry. Jesus often strongly denounced them for their legalism. John 3:1 describes Nicodemus as a leader of the Jews. According to John 7:50-51, Nicodemus was a member of the ruling body of the Jews. Under Roman authority in the time of Christ, the Jewish nation was allowed a measure of self-rule. And in Jerusalem, it was the final court of appeals, for matters regarding Jewish law and religion. This was the body that ultimately condemned Jesus, yet they had to go to Pilate to approve their sentence since the death penalty was beyond their jurisdiction under Roman law. It appears that Nicodemus was part of this great trial. John reported that Nicodemus went to speak to Jesus at night. Many speculate that Nicodemus was either afraid or ashamed to visit Jesus in broad daylight, so he made a nighttime visit. As a member of the ruling Jewish council, it would have been his responsibility to find out about any teachers or other public figures who might lead the people astray. So they were concerned that Jesus had come to lead the people astray. So the story of Nicodemus is not written in the style of modern novels. So as a result, the biblical character can sometimes seem kind of flat, but Nicodemus was a very, very character that, you know, he just leaped off the pages. And for Nicodemus, he was one of these characters. The Gospel of John tells the story of Nicodemus. So we're going to go through the story of Nicodemus. Now, there was a Pharisee named Nicodemus, a leader of the Jews. He came to Jesus by night and said to him, "Rabbi, we know that you are a teacher who has come from God, but no one can do the things or do the signs and miracles that you do apart from the presence of God." Jesus answered him, "Very truly, I tell you, no one can see the kingdom of God without being born from above." Nicodemus said to him, "How can anyone be born after having grown old? Can one enter a second time in his mother's womb and be born again?" Jesus answered, "Very truly, I tell you, no one can enter the kingdom of God without being born of water and spirit." Now, there's much that could be said about Nicodemus in John chapter 3, but for this study, we will just know that Nicodemus ends up pretty confused about his conversation with Jesus. Remember, he was sent there by the Pharisees to find out what his mission was. So instead of going over this whole Nicodemus conversation that he had with Jesus, I'd like to talk about a lesser-known aspect of his story. The fact that chapter 3 is really only the beginning of the story. So he appears again in chapter 7 and one more time in chapter 19. So the progression that Nicodemus goes through in these chapters is what makes this story so interesting. So Nicodemus in chapter 3, like I said, Nicodemus was confused by Jesus' words. It's also important to know that when Nicodemus came to see Jesus in chapter 3, he comes at night. That is under cover of darkness. In the Gospel of John, things often have two levels, a literal level and a spiritual level. And this is the truth of the darkness in this story. In a literal sense, as a respected leader, it's likely that Nicodemus didn't want anyone to know that he was going to see a man perceived as a dangerous troublemaker by Nicodemus' peers. So really to understand what Nicodemus didn't come to Jesus in open, in daylight, you only need to look at what happens in the Gospel of John right before this story. So Jesus drives out the merchants and the money changers from the temple and overturns the tables. This is not exactly the kind of person a respected leader would want to be associated with in those days. Therefore, Nicodemus must have thought it was safer for him to go there at night. But darkness also has a figurative or spiritual meaning. The author of this gospel uses light and dark imagery throughout the whole story. So light symbolizes God's presence. Those who are in the dark do not know God. So the fact that Nicodemus comes to Jesus in the dark is a signal to us from the author that Nicodemus, although he is open-minded, does not yet understand who Jesus is and not yet one of those walking in the light. Unfortunately, after a brief exchange, Nicodemus fades away from the scene while Jesus continues on and on. So we aren't sure what Nicodemus is thinking at the end of this appearance with Jesus, but what we do know is that Nicodemus just didn't seem to get it. But today, I would like to make much of that fact that Nicodemus showed up. He didn't have to take the risk he took. He came in the dark, but at least he came. Nicodemus is a good example of us of not being afraid to show up, even when we don't have it all figured out. He is an example of not being afraid to ask questions and thereby reveal to others that we don't have it all figured out. He teaches us that not to be afraid to look for answers or questions. Answers don't come to those who think they already know it all. The quest for answer must begin with uncertainty. So, Nicodemus, in chapter 7, remember he's a chief priest and a Pharisee, so his brethren sent the police out to arrest Jesus because they felt that Jesus was breaking the law. Never has anyone spoken the way Jesus did. Nobody has ever come and did the miracles that Jesus did. So most of the Pharisees were upset, and they were highly berated that the temple police for not going out to bring Jesus back as they had set out to do. So the Bible does not give an actual date of the occurrences of the Jesus trial, but we're going to get to that. So what we do know is that the trial of Jesus, history does not record, but we know it was on a Sunday morning around April the 4th A.D. Jesus of Nazareth ministry was completed on earth. Everything that he came to do was already completed by April 4th, okay? The purpose of this discourse of the criminal and legal trial of Jesus is to handle the defendant as a Galilean, were, you know, without him being what they call a son of God. They wouldn't call him the son of God. So I want to make it clear that I am viewing the trial in a legal sense, only without any intent to reflect upon Jesus' divinity. Every human being must believe in fair treatment towards his fellow man, and that if a man is accused of a crime, he should receive a fair and impartial trial at the hands of whatever tribunal his case is submitted to. There have been some noted criminal trials have occurred within our lifetime. However, none can be compared to this trial, and this trial occurred within a 24-hour period. In all criminal cases, every defendant charged with a crime is presumed to be innocent until he is proven guilty. And this presumption of innocence must continue throughout the whole trial. He is entitled to every reasonable doubt. And if such reasonable doubt exists in the mind of the conscience of the court, then the court must construe such doubt in the favor of the defendant and acquit him. So, my first point. The Hebrew law prohibit any part of legal proceedings by night. Even before Jesus' trial began, the law was broken. Because he was arrested illegal, the Jewish law prohibited any part of illegal proceedings and capital offense to take place at night. And Jesus was arrested at night. A capital offense must be tried during the day and suspended at night. Criminal cases can be acted upon by the various courts during that daytime only. So they already broke the law, their own law. My second point is Jesus coming before the courts was illegal because the law stated, be not a sole judge, for there is no sole judge but one. An accused man must never be subject to a private or secret examination. He furnished damaging testimony against himself. The high priest privately examined Jesus, and it was illegal. That Jesus was privately examined before the regular trial by the ruling Jewish party. Whether the examiner was Ananias or whether not, you know, not certainly known it was Ananias, but no one can do that. So John alone records that the private interrogation testifying, the high priest then asked Jesus of his disciples and of his doctrine. This interrogation by whomever was illegal because it took place at night and by a sole judge. My third point, the indictment against Jesus was illegal because the law stated the entire criminal procedure of the Mosaic Code rests upon four rules: certainty in the indictment, publicity in the discussion, full freedom granted to the accused, and assurance against all dangers of errors of testimony. The Jewish leaders could not originate charges. It could only investigate those brought before it. The only prosecutors were the witnesses in the crime. The witnesses constituted the charge. There was no formal indictment until these witnesses spoke in public, in a public assembly. When they spoke and the evidence of the two agreed together, it formed a legal indictment. So the charges against Jesus, the charges brought against Jesus before the court was blasphemy against God. The criminal indictment brought against Jesus before Herod was treason against the Roman government. Okay, those were the two charges. These judges who tried Jesus were not selected with the highest consideration of choice by men and therefore were not true ministers of justice, and their decisions did not merit out substantial justice to all. The trial of Jesus consisted in the prejudice of the council towards the accused. The Hebrew law required absolute freedom from all interest in the result of a trial and the entire absence of all prejudice against the accused. Yet Jesus was surrounded by hostile judges already determined upon his death. At a fair trial in full daylight, it was believed that a host of witnesses friendly to Jesus could have been called before his judges, and their testimonies would have established an exact fulfillment of the ancient Messianic prophecy in his birth, life, and arrest, the trial. The only possible verdict they could have legally rendered would have been not guilty. So there were six trials of Jesus. Jesus had six trials, three religious and three civil. The religious trial, three religious trials were Jewish, and the three civil trials were Roman. So here are the results, okay? So all these six trials were carried out on Good Friday from 2 a.m. to 10 a.m. in eight very short hours, okay? Three Jewish religious trials were he was proclaimed a sinner. So the first trial decision was go ahead. The signal was given to go ahead and execute Jesus. This was the first trial, okay? The second trial decision was a death sentence, charge of blasphemy, because Jesus proclaimed himself to be the Messiah, God the Son. The third trial, counsel of the Hebrews, and the decision was death. Now, the three Roman trials where Jesus was proclaimed innocent. In the first trial, the decision was made not guilty. The second trial, Decision was not guilty. The third trial, Pilate again, not guilty, but turned to the Jews to be turned Jesus over to the Jews to be crucified. So Pilate said, this is why he said, I washed his hands. I am innocent of this man's blood. The Jews actually responded, oh, his blood be upon us and our children. Huh, wow. So the accusations that they brought to the Roman court was, oh, we heard him say, I will destroy this temple made by hands, and in 3 days I will build another made without hands. And the second was, I am able to destroy this temple of God and rebuild it in 3 days. So they were like, okay, tell us whether you are Christ, the Son of God. And Jesus said to him, you said it yourself. Nevertheless, I tell you, hereafter you will see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of God and coming on the clouds of heaven. There he, again, they call blasphemy. Are you the Christ, the Son of the Blessed One? And Jesus said, I am. And you shall see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of power and coming with the clouds of heaven. And the high priests were really upset. What further evidence do we need to have on this witness? You know, they cried out. You have heard the blasphemy out of his own mouth. So the elder counselor, when it was day, the people assembled, both chief priests and the scribes, and they led him away to their council chamber, saying, if you are the Christ, tell us. But he said to them, if I tell you, you will not believe, and if I ask you a question, you will not answer. But from now on, the Son of Man will be seated at the right hand of the power of God. And they all said, are you the Son of God then? And he said to them, yes, I am. Then they said, what further information do we need to have, a testimony do we need from him? For we have heard it ourselves from his own mouth. Okay? Those were the six trials of Jesus. But Jesus knew his legal rights, and he did not believe Herod had the right, the power to examine him. Therefore, he was really legally not compelled to answer any of their questions. So, back to Nicodemus. At the end of John's Gospel, after Jesus had died, a man named Joseph, who had been a secret follower of Jesus, he was also a Pharisee, goes public and asks Pilate for Jesus' body in order to bury it. And it reads, Nicodemus, who had at first come to Jesus by night, also came, bringing a mixture of myrrh and aloes, weighing about 100 pounds. They took the body of Jesus and wrapped it with spices and linen clothes, according to the burial customs of the Jews. Now, there was a garden in this place where Jesus was crucified, and in that garden there was a new tomb in which no one had ever laid in. And so because it was the Jewish day of preparation and the tomb was nearby, they laid Jesus in the tomb. Now, think of the progression of Nicodemus makes throughout John's Gospel. He moves from the cover of darkness to public open-mindedness and finally to a public expression of love for Jesus. Nicodemus was one persistent person. You know, he, in his quest for truth, his story shows us that beginning in the dark and in uncertainty is actually the best place to start. From there, you can be open to wherever the Spirit might lead you. I'm sure that for his dark night, Nicodemus could have imagined his encounter with Jesus would end with spices at a tomb. Neither can we know where our questions will lead us, but we can be certain that opening ourselves up to new ideas and new possibilities is not a slippery slope. It's an adventure and one that the Spirit leads us on. This is a venture that the Spirit leads us on. Whenever you start coming into the light, you start understanding that, you know, now you're on a journey. So in our world today, it is easy to get overwhelmed by so much information from so many different sources. Some of it can be reliable, some of it propaganda. Some of it, you know, alternative facts. In this context, we can all the more appreciate Nicodemus' persistence in seeking answers to his questions and not resting until he arrived, until he arrived at the truth. Though, of course, even the spices in the tomb were not Nicodemus' final destination in his search for truth. We don't know where his spiritual journey took him after that. We do know that he became a follower of Christ, but we don't know even if it ended there. For during our lifetime, none of us arrived at such great an understanding of truth that our search for answers can stop. The important thing is to keep searching, just like Nicodemus did. And in my conclusion, The six trials of Jesus were a total miscarriage of justice that involved Jewish envy, political pandering, even evil and pure cowardice. Contrary to the popular view held by today's Jewish community, it was the pagan Romans who found Jesus innocent and the chosen race who crucified him out of envy and hard-heartedness. Just evil. So Pilate said, as he washed his hand, "I am innocent of this man's blood." The Jews actually responded, "His blood be upon us and our children." I mean, really, how can you, throw a whole generation and generation and generation of children under, such a bloody covenant with Rome? So be it. As such, it is the gospel. We are all guilty of crucifying Jesus if we have committed even one sin which Jesus needs to shed his blood to bring about this forgiveness and the hope of eternal life in heaven. The seventh and final trial, this was the final trial of Jesus, takes place in your heart, right here, right now. So do you think he was innocent or guilty of sin? And that reminds me, today in our current events where we are today, the brother George Floyd that was killed by the police officer. Now, he didn't get a trial. He didn't get a trial. What happened to him was they found him guilty and they put punishment upon him right there. He lost his life. He died. He died. He didn't get a fair trial, just like Jesus didn't get a fair trial. All the brothers that was killed by the hands of the police didn't get a fair trial. Many people out here don't get fair trials. And we have to understand that where we are today, especially as African Americans, these are things that we have to bring before the laws of the land. You see the riots that are breaking out now. You see what's going on, what type of turmoil the world is in. It's really not based on, and they're turning it into racism. This is not about black and white. This is about people and police. People and police. It could have been a black cop. It could have been a Chinese cop. It's not about racism at this point. It's about people and police. We have other fights that deal with racism, but this particular case is not racism. We're not dealing with racism. We're dealing with police brutality. We're dealing with their domestic violence on our people. So when you look at what's going on in the world, and this man lost his life because he didn't get a chance to go to a trial, and get his punishment from the courts, his punishment was rapidly, upon him. So these are the things that we have to deal with now as a people. We have to deal with the fact that the laws of the land are not made for us when it comes to especially our injustices. We've been doing this now for 50 years or more, 50 years that I can count, that we have been fighting this police brutality on our people. So what we have to do now is understand, where do we go from here? Do we wait and wait for them to hand us down new laws, new justices, like they arrested this guy, this police officer? It didn't give us justice. It didn't give us justice because what they did was the same thing they always do. They arrest them. And then knowing that this police officer is under a a Bill of Rights, or the Police Bill of Rights, which give them certain rights. That means that they are able to use a certain force. And after that force has been used, then they can only charge you for the extra force that you use. This is why he got manslaughter charges, okay, and third-degree murder charges. And all that adds up to 5 years or probation. Okay, so that's not going to be justice, and that's not gonna change the way that officers deal with us as a people. You know, we know that we're disproportionately criminalized. So this is going to continue. This one policeman getting arrested is not going to solve the problem. If we can't get equal justice under the law, then we're going to always have riots every 4 years. We're going to have a riot. If you just think about the riots that has been in the past, every 4 years we're going to have riots. Every 4 years, you know, we're going to be going through these protests. We're going to do this continuously, and that's what they want. They don't want to solve the problem. They don't want to solve the problem because to solve the problem, they would have to eliminate the Police Bill of Rights that gives them certain power. That means that if they go out and kill somebody, they can't get arrested right then. If we go out and kill somebody, they're going to arrest us immediately. The Police Bill of Rights covers the police officers that are out there committing all these crimes. When I say crimes, I'm talking about arresting us falsely, shooting to kill, murder. They get away with all of that under the Police Bill of Rights. And we have, as black people, have to learn the law. If we can't eliminate this Police Bill of Rights or get this Police Bill of Rights rewritten in a way that policemen are not protected when they commit crimes. That's why they're doing what they want to do, because they know they are protected. All they got to do is say, well, I had to use force because the person got, you know, out of hand, so I had to, you know, put them down on the ground. And if they died during the time, oh, well, you know, I had to do what I had to do. That's their answer. That's this guy here answer. He did what he had to do. And his law, the law goes so far with him, and then it stops. But they're giving them too much power. They're giving them way too much power. And that's the same thing that these Pharisees saw, that Jesus was having too much power, that he was having too much power. He was healing the sick. He was making the blind to see. You know, he was making the lame to walk. He was turning water into wine. He was just healing on the Sabbath. He was just doing everything that, that's why I said, these miracles you were doing I've never seen before, you know. So it's just us having to understand that every man is innocent until proven guilty. The same with Jesus. They didn't give Jesus a chance. They didn't give him a chance or no type of defense, because they did it at night. They did it in the darkness. They did it behind closed doors so nobody would come to his defense. But we got to understand that, you know, no matter what they did, Jesus had already completed his mission. That's why he was nonchalant when they was asking him crazy questions over and over again. Are you the Son of God? If you say this, if you say that. He said, well, if I tell you, you're not going to believe me. If I ask you a question, so what's the point? He had no care after that, because his mission was. So the question I ask, do you think he was innocent or guilty of sin, which is what the Pharisees tried him under? Blasphemy against God, which was the main thing that the Pharisees were concerned about to save themselves. Jesus was convicted of blaspheming, which was a sin against God. So he was crucified for that. But I tell you today, he was not guilty. And that completes my session for today. I hope you understood and go back and read Nicodemus and the trial of Jesus. You know, a lot of people don't know that there were six trials that Jesus had. Go. So read through that and show yourself approved of what you read. And God bless you and have a wonderful Sabbath. And I'll see you next time. The Daughters of Zion Show.